Christians. I'm David Brown. It's Sunday evening with all of its splendor. It's time for another exciting edition of Real Questions. Tonight, we have a lot to talk about, but a short period of time. That's all I can say. And so I'll cut to preliminaries, but I will say this much. I want to give a shout out to my pastor, Pastor Carl Pierce, and his lovely wife. Got to give a shout out to my wife, Sister Monica Brown. No, she's listening always. And definitely, I want to also take the time to thank all of the people who have sent their well wishes and support to the family of Aaron Wilkes, who we lost, who was an activist over in East Baltimore, who always listened and called in on this show many, many times. And so in his passing, we certainly still are grieving what he's done to help this community, and we hope that someone else emerges in that same capacity to fill that slot, because we do fill a void. But I got a lot to talk about tonight. Let me just also thank Mark Waldron. Earlier I heard Derek Fletcher, and then when I came in and saw Mark and his son, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Okay, they're here. But Derek, he was here doing a little bit earlier, and Mark's here. So for Gospel Instruments of Praise, they do a fantastic job each and every week. And in fact, the entire cast of Gospel Grace, they do a great job every Sunday. I got a hot show, so I don't want to take up much time. I just kind of want to go to it, if you can just allow me today. I have Baltimore's prominent attorney, A. Dwight Pettit, here with me. And I had to ask this gentleman to come back again this week, because, I mean, it's like we can't get from week to week before something else happens. And that's Sergeant Lewis Hobson, who's also here with me. Thank you so much, both of you.
My pleasure, David.
For joining me tonight.
My pleasure, David.
And I guess you're wondering, what are we going to talk about? Well, we're going to talk about a lot. And I want to start by, let's talk about, first of all, it's a bad situation right now. We have a consent decree that's been laid out before us for the city of Baltimore, and now they're trying to pick a cast to deal with consent decree. And Mr. Pettit, you might know something about how the selection process is being vetted and how things are being done, but I needed you here from a legal perspective. And Sergeant Hobson, you also know a lot about the inside track of what's going on.
Well, David, it appears that the consent decree has been, as we know, accepted by the federal judge in this particular case, and it appears that the way this is supposed to work, the community is supposed to come up with recommendations. You had 20 some people or organizations that applied, and I understand now it's down to 6. And according to the paper, it says that the community and the mayor's office and all would participate with the DOJ, the Department of Justice. However, as we know, under this administration, the DOJ was withdrew from really active participation. And I don't know whether the Trump administration is a valid entity in terms of being a part of this. But whatever happens, it will have to go. I think the judge is Bedard, a federal judge, and that judge will, in term of what is recommended to him, will make the selection of the monitors. The monitors of the organizations that will, in fact, for a certain, I think, 3 years, will oversee the consent decree and its enforcement in terms of what's required of the city and the Baltimore City Police Department in terms of reform.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who they select to participate out of the 6 existing so far entities that are there. I don't know who to trust anymore, to be honest with you. I mean, with what happened last week, Sergeant Hobson, I mean, you know, they had 5 police officers that were federally indicted, and then 2 more got picked up this past week, and they're being charged, and they've been given, it apparently seems as if they've taken plea deals for bad behavior. You can talk about the behavior. I'm just going to say bad behavior.
Right. And before we address that, the first thing I want to do is thank you, listening audience, for tuning in. Also, would like to, I always like to start every show with we're almost at 200 murders this year. Mm. we are in a crisis situation.
And I think we're at 192 right now.
192.
Yeah.
You know, this looks like we're going to surpass any previous years of homicides. So, you know, we've got to start taking this serious. Our elected officials need to start taking this serious. And my prayers and go out for the many families that lost ones, and also that it's a terrible thing to lose a family member through an act of violence. So my prayers are with you. And like I said, hopefully we can start a road to recovery. And with that said, on a consent decree, we need to be very, very careful about a consent decree. As you know, well aware, I've won several lawsuits, and one of the lawsuits was a multi-million dollar lawsuit in which we had a federal monitor, and he was here for like 3 to 5 years. And like they always say, the devil's in the
details.
And that was something that we were just so happy to get the monitor. But the monitor only went to the police commissioner. They kept everything secret. They wrote all these reports and everything. But no one had got a chance to see what the monitor came up with. And he was by himself. He was a very intelligent and very smart guy. But he was out of D.C., and he really didn't understand Baltimore City and the inner work in the police department. So when we're picking this monitor, he should be somebody, or she should be somebody local. Somebody that's well aware and abreast of a lot of situation that goes on in this city and what goes on in the Baltimore City Police Department. And to be very transparent. Don't say the words like, you know, our police department always say we're transparent, and they're really not transparent. Now, getting back to the officers, 7 to 9 years is a very light term, especially in the federal government. You're talking about robberies and stealing and drug dealing. So,
well, 7 to 9 years is part of the plea deal, right?
Right. Well, that's relatively a light sentence.
Yeah, because actually they were going to receive life sentences, and I think the other five may be up for
right.
Life sentences.
Because you're not only talking about those who took an oath of office, but you swore before God, and you swore on your badge. And not only does it make every other officer out here look bad, but it goes to the leadership of this Baltimore City Police Department. You can't have this many officers involved in criminal activity and not hold the command structure accountable. The highest ranking person so far that I know have been charged is a sergeant. Now, I think anybody with common sense realizes that a fish rots from the head down. It don't rot from the bottom up. So I think we're going to have to look at who else is involved in this. The accountability factor is very important. And we also need to know who signed all these overtime slips and these statistics and quotas and everything. And somebody needs to go to jail other than these regular officers. Now, don't get me wrong. They need to go to jail also. But I have a very strong feeling, and you can quote me on this, that this is not the last officer that you're going to see arrested behind this incident. I got a feeling that these guys are talking, and they gave a lot of information to the feds, and the feds are going to come back, and they're going to arrest people. And even though these guys, some of them have retired and tried to get away and left the agency, they will come and get you. They will come and get you. This is going to be a real long process, trust me.
Mr. Pettit, let's get your thoughts on it.
Well, you know, I think we have to play it out. The thing about it, as I said earlier, the decision-making here is a federal judge. This federal judge has a history to some extent. I think he's an Obama appointee. He has been very, very straight shooter so far. So he will select the monitor. Now, I noticed, you know, just from looking at the list, the groups that applied do have and represent some diversity. I see Tyrone Powell's.
Yeah, that's a good choice.
One of the candidates. I see Attorney Ken Thompson and a couple of other big law firms where they've indicated that they have a representation of minority as well as women and so forth. So I think this judge is going to be looking for the diversity and somebody, as you said, Sarge, that has some background and history in Maryland as well as some experience with consent decrees and some understanding of the process. But, you know, Sergeant Hobson is absolutely correct, and I've said it over and over. You have two, David. This is an emergency situation. And when you come up with this little mess that they came up last week about a new gun law, when we got gun laws on top of gun laws on top of gun laws, we got use of a handgun in the commission of a felony, mandatory sentences. We got what they call prohibited person. If you got convicted of a crime of violence or anything carrying over 2 years, it's a mandatory five. You got the program that came out of Virginia. Out of Richmond. Program that sent it over to the feds, where you got higher mandatories and so forth. And so to come up with a law where you say you're going to arrest regular citizens if they happen to have a gun and put a mandatory five on them and with no record, no convictions, that's not going to the bad guys.
Absolutely.
That's going to
the good guys.
To the good guys. That's nothing but zero tolerance.
Yeah, zero tolerance all again. Speaking of which, we may as well have Pastor Ron Owens jump in now. Pastor, how are you today? Okay, let me see if I can get him up here. Pastor Owens?
You know, while you're doing that, we also have to be very careful, especially when you're talking about these new gun laws, and because just like when it came with zero tolerance, they're only directed to one community. And when you start targeting one community,
especially in this case, Sergeant, where it's specifically directed at Baltimore City and not the rest of the state. That smacks of the 14th Amendment and equal protection. Sorry to cut you off.
Pastor Owens, are you there?
I am.
Yes. Well, I brought you in now because we've already started in on the gun law. Let me ask you, what's your reaction to the gun law?
Well, once again, 90.6% of the time, I think Dwight and I are the two most conservative people that you have on your show. But I think that normally I would agree with him, but in this one I stand polar opposite. Because I think he speaks, one, as a defense attorney, but then secondly, it is directed at our community. And I think it's about time that we not be afraid to embrace that. The principle, the problem, and the crime and the murder that this is directed at those people who wish to carry a gun. Reality dictates that if you're possessing a gun, at some point it's to do harm. If you want a legal gun, justify it, apply for a license, and carry.
But let me just interrupt you, because people don't understand that, Pastor. This is not about the legality of the guns. This is about the legality of the possession. This is not illegality of guns goes to straw sales. It goes to not being registered or stolen guns. This is not about that. This is about you having possession of a gun outside of your home or your business, even if the gun is legal, registered, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. This
now,
is strictly possession.
That's not my interpretation of the bill.
Well, I'm giving you the law.
Okay, well, let's look at the bill that is coming up. I think this bill is designed to keep those who bear guns illegally off the streets of Baltimore. If we don't recognize that Baltimore is under crisis, in World War II when America was under crisis, it did some things that we are all not proud of, but it did some things in defense of us, the greater good of a country. And I think the greater good of this city is that we are under siege. What we hear on the news is that there have been 170-plus homicides. What we don't hear on the news is that we're bordering 672 shootings in the city of Baltimore. Gun violence is out of control, and by and large, that gun violence is us against us.
That's where I have a problem with, Pastor. And I got to put this out on the line here.
Yeah.
Because, we've been saying, which is a major, major assumption, that it is us killing us. But, you've been around, Mr. Pettit, and, of course, you too, Sergeant Hobson. Basically, back in the day, they had something called Black October. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I remember.
Black October was around here doing stuff. Now, they said that was us. But many of us know that it wasn't us necessarily killing us. Now, I wish I could say it was black-on-black crime, but with what happened just last week alone and the hundreds of cases that could, in fact, be impacted by what is happening with the seven officers indicates to me that we may take a back seat for just a moment and take a look at what's really going on.
Pastor, if I could just say something, you know, and I very, very rarely, anybody know me, ever disagree with a pastor. And you know, and I respect you tremendously. But I have to disagree with certain points. If you look at the zero tolerance policy, and I was there at the beginning, I saw the results of zero tolerance, and I saw that, you know, they worked on people's fear. And did it up in New York, and the whole thing was stop and frisk, and, you know, we're going after guns and bad guys with guns. And, you know, I listened to a lot of commissioners demonize, and a lot of people, good people, demonize a lot of people in the city. There's so much that goes into this, you know, and if you think that just outlawing a gun is going to stop a violent crime, that's not going to happen. Take with somebody for 36, 37 years in this profession. I have won Police Officer of the Year several times. I recovered so many handguns during one of those times that I won Police Officer of the Year. That didn't stop and reduce crimes. I worked drug enforcement. I worked every task force that you could possibly name. I see a lot of people who don't look like me and you from this community bring guns in from outside
the
community.
No debate about that. I agree with you. You know, guns are imposed on our community. We don't make them. And like this counselor said, we do have straw sales. But right. I will go back and say this. I'm one of those who, like you, are against zero policy, the zero tolerance policies that swept and loaded our prison. But this is not something that is sweeping and loading our prison. This is attempting to give some type of warning to those that are inflicted. Unless I'm the only one that lives in Baltimore, no, Baltimore is under a siege.
I was born here and live here.
But let me just say this again, Pastor. What I'm trying to say, with all due respect, a guy goes out here and commits a crime, you're already facing a mandatory five. If he's a bad guy and he didn't even have to have a record. If he stood trial for over 2 years, a penalty of over 2 years, or if he committed even simple assault, a crime of violence, then that makes him a prohibited person, and he's automatically subject to 5 years. If he's caught with a gun near some dope, he's facing a mandatory. If he commits,
unless he hires you,
but the discretion is in the state's attorney.
You may need to hire him
to bring those actions before the courts. The court that, you know, the police commissioner said, well, it's the judges. It's not the judges. If you get a mandatory, the judge has no discretion. Now, Sally Sue walks out here and she's 78 years old, or the gentleman that was killed the other day at 97 years old, who was found bludgeoned to death in his apartment. Right. He wants to go to 7-Eleven and he sticks an old piece of gun in his pocket.
I've had that happen.
And he's busted, then he's facing a mandatory five. That's not right.
I think it has no record or anything.
You know, the
state's attorney can bring it back, number one. It's up to the state's attorney to levy it. And I think that that's a rare exception.
But I tell you what is not
a rare exception.
Pastor, let me just say this. And I tell you what is not a rare exception is this. I have studied this problem so back and forth for years and years and years. I've done all type of reports on this. I've took the city council in busloads to Richmond, Virginia. You know, Richmond, Virginia, which is very similar to Baltimore City, had a murder capital. What are they? Were the murder capital of the world at one time, not too long ago, before we went to zero tolerance and all this foolishness that we have now. They had Project Exile.
That's what I was trying to think of.
And Project Exile. Exactly. Project Exile. It didn't stop the drug dealing. But what it did was it took the guns out of the hands of felons and people of this nature. There's many lessons that can be learned from that. Simply putting a charge on somebody. Because first of all, the first thing we have to do is get our police department straight. Because if you can see now, we got people out here planting drugs on people. We got people out here.
You mean police officers?
Police officers.
Let's keep it right where.
Well, I think the problem with the police department, Sergeant, and you're going to hate me, please don't send your squad to get me. The problem with the police department is that the union has ruined the ability to protect and preserve. And I'm one of the few that are stand alone that we refuse to say stuff when it comes to police. No. One bad apple does spoil the barrel. The barrel is rotten.
It ain't
from the top to the bottom.
Right. It ain't the FOP.
The police spends too much time turning its back, and the FOP spends too much time defending crooked cops, promoting policies that hinder justice when those cops did what Freddie Gray's arrestors did.
But when you talk about,
and so that's all the bureaucracy of the FOP.
When you talk about crooked cops, though, Ron, when you talk about crooked cops, we got to look at what has just happened over the past, you know, couple of days. These two
crooked cops.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
I'm talking about people who have been affected by it. Now,
right.
Mr. Petty, you got a case coming up, I think, this week or tomorrow.
Yes.
That deals with Mazan, and this gentleman was shot 14 times by the police.
Right.
And it's just
and Petty,
out of
thank
control.
Him for everything you can get. Bury the city.
All we're saying is that, you know, all of us like to think of the police as holier than thou. That when the police come, it's going to be officer friendly. But that's not also always the case.
Exactly.
And we are seeing right now just the tip of the iceberg with all the officers that are being charged with taking money, planting dope, planting guns.
I mean,
and that's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, do you
stuff.
Realize, Reverend, I'm sure you did, and do you realize the implication of the President of the United States telling the acting Attorney General that I got problems with you because you're from Baltimore and you were the U.S. Attorney for Baltimore and the state of Maryland?
Absolutely.
Come on, give me a break.
You know, Pastor,
Attorney Pettit, I don't think you heard me. I hope that you bury the city for the actions of crooked cops tomorrow.
Thank you, Pastor.
You succeed, and it's people like you that aren't afraid to take on the cops. What I'm saying is,
they put so many measures in place that you can't really take them to where they need to go, because generally, I mean, if it was held in the local courts, it would be caps on it. So, you know, you couldn't take
if
them
you
to
would
the lake, but
dismantle,
it's federal. This is federal,
if we
isn't it?
Federal, yes.
Dismantle, if we could dismantle the FOP and allow cops to operate under the same penalties of perjury, of charges, and good citizen conduct behavior that you and I function under. The reason why cops believe that they are above the law, beyond the law, and are the law is because they're hiding behind a secret shield called the FOP that has invaded Annapolis, that has written laws on the books to corrupt the police and to protect the police. And so I say we start with throwing the entire borough out, start with the Fraternal Order of Police, and maybe then citizens can gain some confidence and trust and integrity
when
in
the
police department
the whole
that
barrel,
doesn't serve.
Are you talking from the top down, or are you speaking from the bottom up?
I am saying that it is a both effect. Not for far too long, we've dropped the tree at the top, and the tree keeps on cutting. Let's start from the bottom to the top. We've always worked. We peg. Anytime the Fraternal Order of Police, in the words of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, is the most wickedest institution in America towards the liberties of black people. That's what the minister says. Anytime the Fraternal Order Police Department has specified that they are totally against the chief, that makes me wonder, should we not be for the chief? The Fraternal Order of Police are the ones that empower cops to believe that they can hit the streets and hit you at the same time.
Now, I agree with
you,
Reverend.
Sergeant Hobbs,
let me just answer you in certain ways. And I know in 36 or 37 years I've been a police officer. I know that
union and I can hear you.
Let me finish, Pastor, okay? And I know you're upset. You're no more upset than I am, who have to live through this each and every day. You're no more upset than when I've given hearings after hearings, when so many of our good officers have came forward and reported corruption and reported discrimination and other issues that were of importance to the citizens of Baltimore. You're no more upset than all the good police officers out there right now is putting their lives on the line, walking through these alleys and trying to protect the good people out here. But you just can't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Well, don't throw the top out there.
Well,
Let me finish, please.
It's not just the FOP, but if you concentrate on just the FOP, then you're going to miss the entire picture. This is about leadership. This is about accountability. This is about you, me, and the citizens of Baltimore. You see, the Baltimore City Police Department has a paternalistic attitude toward the community. That means that, you know, they consider us children. They're going to tell us what to do, how to do it, and a seat of power. This is as simple as anything. They're a union. And as a union, They're supposed to protect their members, good or bad. Now, you can say what you want. They're doing what they're supposed to do. You know, they're providing attorneys for bad and good police officers. I don't hate the FOP. I dislike many things that they do. I've stood against them. I've taken them to court. I've taken their members to court. I mean, but I also understand where the problem really lays. It doesn't lay with any particular group. The Baltimore City Police Department, in my opinion, need to be completely dismantled and then redone again.
So you're not saying not much different than what I am.
Yes, I am saying.
That one bad apple spoils the barrel.
Well, the barrel is already spoiled.
Good cops who are bad cops because they
barrel's been spoiled for a while.
You see, it's up to people like you and the good citizens of Baltimore to perform a protection for those officers that want to come forward. You know, this is not something that I'm just spouting out here. I've proven this in court. I've proven this in every entity that you can name. Retaliation is real. And what I mean by real, if you report criminal activity or corruption or discrimination, you're going to be retaliated against. It's just as simple. You're going to lose your job.
You're going to be retaliated against by
and
other
that is
officers.
Because, see, here's the problem.
Other police officers.
I understand
officers.
Your issue, but the problem is you lose your job because you don't have, when you become honest, you have an institution that's supposed to defend you that withdraws from you.
That's called
when
city
good
government.
Cops come forward, the Fraternal Order of Police.
That's called
the bad
that's,
cops.
See, that's called city government. And that's
no,
why.
No. We're not going to throw it there. Keep it at the
Oh, we have to throw it there.
Department.
No,
the Fraternal Order of Police, if I walk in as a cop and there's a case right now that I won't say, and you probably know what I want to say, that if that cop who accused two other cops, now the Fraternal Order of Police won't defend him, but they're defending the cops that he accused. Dump the Fraternal Order
of
Police.
What about the cop who had a rat placed on his car for coming in and trying to do the right thing, and they put rats all on his car?
He eventually had to leave the department.
And all of those guys are protected by
the
Fraternal Order of Police.
He didn't get much protection.
Here's the thing.
That's my point, David. Pat, once you go clean, the rat Fraternal Order of Police have the other rats to dump rats on your car.
Pastor, the Fraternal Order of Police have a boss, too. The Vanguards has a boss, too. Everything, the seat of power is with the community, and the seat of power is also with our local government. If you don't think that the mayor and a city council, and those people don't know what's happening in the police department, they know.
Mr. Petter, out of experience.
Once again,
Hold on, Ron. Hold your thought, Ron. Thank you. Mr. Petter, because you are one of the few attorneys in this town, period, that have gone up against the cops time and time again. In watching all of those cases that you have had to fight before, where do you see the problem lying?
I have to agree with Sergeant Hobson. It's systemic, and it's with the seat of government. We have mayor after mayor, police. How many police commissioners do we have? Six, seven,
yeah.
And nobody will really move in to resolve the problem. And we have administration after administration that doesn't deal with what's right and what's wrong and should we do the right thing. They deal with obstruction, cover up, procrastination,
exactly.
Delay, and paying. People talk taxpayer money.
They're
paying
millions.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars
exactly.
Of law firms, the biggest law firms in the state, to come in and do nothing but delay and obstruct. And I have seen this pattern for the last 25 years.
Listen, gentlemen, hang on. I've got Baltimore's prominent attorney, A. Dwight Pettit, and Sergeant Lewis Hobson, and Pastor Ron Owens. We're all here together. We'll be back. The telephone number to call is 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888. I'm David Brown. We'll be back with more in just a moment. Brown. Tonight we are in the frying pan, as one would say, and joining me in discussion tonight, Pastor Ron Owens, I have Sergeant Lewis Hobson, and Baltimore's prominent attorney, A. Dwight Pettit. Mr. Pettit, you know, I know you'll be going into trial on the Mazan case, I believe, beginning tomorrow.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to say, listen, we wish you well. I know you can't really talk much about the particulars of the case, but Sergeant Hobson, I think you know a little bit about it too, you know? And Mr. Petty, you can speak to the extent that you can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know about it. And, you know, I do understand that Dwight cannot speak on about it. I'll tell you that, but there's no better attorney than to have. You know, I understand he's put together a super team, Johnny Cochran, a great team over there. And I tell you this, though, from my understanding, the young man was in the Southwest District, and there were some uniform officers in, I think, a plainclothes car, and they perceived that the individual had a gun, and they chased him down. Shot at him like 14 times, and a little bit over, a whole lot of overkill. Even somebody supposed to have a gun, and I think that it just goes back to that we need more control over the Baltimore City Police Department, and more control means over these plainclothes units, over these cowboy police officers, and on police officers that. Have abused their authority and their power. And this is not to say, and I know there's a lot of police officers out there listening, and this is not to impugn their reputation in any form or another. We have a lot of great police officers out here, and they go out and do a good job each and every day. And as I was trying to express to the pastor, and God bless him, but you're really going to have to start looking at this from a different point of view, a different paradigm, because it's not working. And I'm tired as a citizen of Baltimore City who lives here, raised here, and so are the other citizens. A lot of people don't feel safe, and we're in a crisis situation. But because we're in a crisis situation, means that we have to use crisis-type tactics. We have to use good, sound logic and good, sound understanding and policies. We have to also understand that we don't have a policing plan. I don't care who sits there and get upset that I said that. A policing plan is really holistic. It includes everybody, community. And you just can't say, well, police department, commander, you put out a policing plan. No, it must be inclusive to everybody. We've got to first clean our own house before we can clean anybody else's house.
Mr. Petty?
Let me just add one thing. As you said, David, I really can't talk about it because we're going to be paneling a jury tomorrow. And I don't want to do anything to implant any type of anything with the jury. And this is in federal court. The jury will be coming from across the state. But I do want to say one thing for clarification, if I may, Sergeant. And this is an agreed fact by everybody. Right. There was no gun.
Wow.
No gun was ever found.
So they shot the guy 14 times and he didn't have a weapon or anything?
Nothing.
No dope, no gun, no nothing.
See, we've got to do something about this. And these are the things that I'm talking about. And probably many of those guys are probably no longer with the department. And a lot of these guys get promoted. And you go back and check their records. None of this stuff is held against them. I really believe there are a lot of solutions that we can use in a situation like this. And you see, part of our city government, we should have something like a federal term is called restorative justice. You can put together a board. And that board could be comprised of the pastors, of Baltimore City, the attorney, the city solicitors, retired commanders, and our activists out there who I have in the highest esteem. And they can sit down and look at some of these situations that's happening in and around Baltimore City and come to great logical decisions. And if a person's been, unfairly incarcerated. Think about all the people under zero tolerance that was unfairly dealt with. Think about that. There was hundreds of thousands of people. Think about all the people just in this last case where 100 cases had to be dropped by the state's attorney's office.
Because of one crooked cop. But I'll go back to the principal.
There's no such police review
board that can't be engaged because they hide. Police can't be bad to testify. Police can't be subpoenaed by the review board because they are protected by the fraternal order of police that does not allow a police to be held to the same standard of wrongdoing when caught in a criminal act.
Okay. Pastor, remember this.
I got to get to the phone.
You're right. But Pastor, remember this. There's no such thing as a crooked cop. Either you're a crook or you're a cop. You can't be both.
410-319-8888.
That sounds good. That sounds like a line from Turn Order Police.
Leo, you're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, my friends. Can
good
you
evening,
hear me,
Leo.
Mr. Leo? How are you?
I'm wonderful. Kevin Davis is not indispensable. There seems to be a belief that we've got to have him. He's not. He hasn't been held accountable, and he's not held having his command staff hold anybody accountable. We've got a public hearing on Tuesday morning at 10 a.m. Unheard of. Why would this thing be impaneled at City Hall, this one-year mandatory sentence public hearing regarding a mandatory sentence for guns, illegal guns, at 10 a.m. on Tuesday morning? My take on it is that the mayor, the president of the city council, and my city councilman, Eric Costello, who is an engineer of sorts for the Greater Baltimore Committee, they've decided that the public should not be given a say at that point in time. And therefore, you're going to hold a hearing on Tuesday morning. This is a state agency we're talking about, in point of fact. The 1974 Law Enforcement Officers Bill of Rights is a reflection of the systemic basis upon which the police are given the rights that ordinary citizens are not given. And that systemically speaks to institutional racism in the department and in the government. Fraternal Order of Police, of course they're going to protect their members. They're racist. We know that. NRA, same thing. We understand that. But why hasn't the city government frame this discussion in the context of the Democratic Party and the fact that the state officials and federal officials, Chris Van Hollen, Elijah Cummings, Paul Sarbanes, and we can go on, Martin O'Malley, Mike Miller, Mike Bush, state legislators, there's no wall around Baltimore City. Consequently, more than 60% of the guns that are confiscated or pulled or collected by police don't come from within the state. We don't manufacture guns in this city. So there has to be, whatever is taken has to be done from the perspective of this being a national effort at dealing with gun control and not simply directed at black men, as I think it is being targeted. And we're the ones that are going to be targeted by this racist police department.
All right, Leo, thank you very much for your call. Let's go to Theo over in Hamden.
Yes, good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
I'm opposed to any new criminal law being passed for the following reason, which nobody seems to be talking about. Equal protection under the law no longer exists in Baltimore City, and Mr. Pettit, please correct me if I'm wrong, the state's attorney has indicated that if a Hispanic person is arrested, you have to consider the implications of that arrest. Is that not correct?
Well, I know that was an instruction from City Hall.
Or from City Hall.
Right.
So where is the equal protection? In other words, there's going to be two protected groups. They're not going to harass white people. Everybody knows that because that's who they want to come into the city. And now if there's two people, an African-American and a Hispanic guy, both are carrying guns, the Hispanic guy is going to get greater consideration. You can't proceed. There should be no laws executed in Baltimore City until that directive is trashed. Please.
Theo has it right. And let me just say this real quick. The elements of zero tolerance, when zero tolerance first started, it was the same argument. It was the same argument. If you go back and do the research now, the Brookings Institution, Forbes Magazine, the New York Study, even the federal
Center
government,
for political and economic studies,
everybody
all of those groups
says the same thing. They have failed with these failed policies. And so now what they're doing is saying, well, let's create another law. We've got enough laws. What we got to do is enforce the laws that we have on the books. We need better policies. We need better communications with the community. And Pastor, let me say this. In 37 years, I have never been a friend of the FOP.
Let me just say this for clarification for the last caller. What he's talking about was the city directive as it led to sanctuary cities.
Yes.
And I think the directive which came out in the past administration, not the Pew administration, was that police would be limited for certain questioning because that would lead to the immigration department having jurisdiction to seize that information and the persons accordingly. But back to equal protection, the equal protection violation of the new law, unless they move to get it on the statewide basis, and that has constitutional suspect, the new law is that it would be enacted only in Baltimore City. And to me, when you start talking about arbitrary and capricious law that will affect only a class, certain class of people, the city, the citizens of Baltimore City, then that violates the 14th Amendment and the citizens' right for equal protection of the law. And I think constitutionally suspect from Jump Street.
Let's go back to the phones. Clarence, you're on the air.
Come on, man.
Oh, Thomas, you're on.
Hey, guys, what's going on, man?
Hey, Mr. Thomas.
How you doing?
Hey, Thomas. I thought y'all didn't love me no more today, man. It's Pastor and Sergeant, Dave, Brother David. Listen, question for you guys, okay? With Kevin Davis being the police commissioner, right? Under his tenure now, guys, we have 962 murders under his tenure. Why does Kevin Davis still keep his job, okay? That's the first question you have to ask. The next question, this new gun law that they want to create, I understand now that your city council president, Jack Young, has a weapon permit to carry his weapon while he's conducting city business. David, when do City Hall close and when do they open? When is the city council president on the job or not on the job?
Well, I mean, he writes his own schedule, I would think, pretty much.
Okay.
I mean, he is the president
so
of the council.
If he goes to a restaurant or a nightclub or whatever, he's carrying that weapon with him, right?
Well, let's see, the gun permits have strict regulations. It's difficult enough to get the gun permit.
Right.
I'm in the process of renewing mine now. It's a very difficult thing to get, and once they give it to you, it has certain restrictions on it in terms of alcohol and things like that. But believe it or not, I've had people, this is how arbitrary and capricious this is, I've had people who were coming home from work who were security guards and had taken their gun off and put
exactly.
it in a glove compartment and stopped by police on a traffic violation and charged with a gun because the cop that stops them interprets, well, you're not at work, and that's a violation of the law. So it's a very, very subjective interpretation. That's why it's open to suspect in terms of being unconstitutional, because it's vague.
That's what I was getting at, Dwight, because if you have a legal right to carry that weapon, that is not what they call a prohibit you from carrying it when you have a legal right to carry it.
Right.
The only thing that will prohibit you from carrying it is the certain times that they said, no, not being around alcohol, nightclubs, or whatever the situation is. But, David, you work at City Hall, man. When did you basically punch the clock or didn't punch the clock? I mean, say, for instance, if you and the councilman that you work for, David, had a meeting to take afterwards, would that consider still being on city time?
A meeting after 9 to 5 would be still work time.
It was still work time. Guys, this law is situated to really give a bunch of people criminal records that should not have criminal records.
Exactly.
And we get your point,
exactly,
Thomas.
Exactly.
And God forbid, if some of these pastors who now apply for handgun permits because of the different money and stuff being transferred through churches, if some of them get caught up, man, there's a whole bunch of us going to be in trouble around here.
Well, hold on. I have been
caught
up. Like Attorney White says, I have a gun permit, and I have my gun in the glove box. I told them. The saving grace for me, Counselor, was that just by the grace of God, there was, and that's what my lawyer, there was a money bag that I had forgotten to deposit it from rental property the first of the month. But I didn't take the clip out, and of course, you know, the cop framed it in that, though you have a permit, it wasn't displayed, it wasn't yada, yada, yada. So that
right.
does impact people.
You're right. Mm-hmm. You're right,
you know,
Pastor.
You just be careful about, you know, let me tell you, these are failed policies, and a lot of times we get off track. We need to be dealing with crime, and the crisis of crime, okay? And a lot of people don't have good, solid ideas or strategies or policing plans and everything like that. So they come up. And they have these guns and zero tolerance and lock people up and this type of mentality. You're going to see a lot more of this coming from this White House, from the Attorney General's office, going to these police departments and these jurisdictions, to these governors who says, listen, unless you show me stats and people getting arrested, you know what? You're not going to get any monies. So I'm leery of any time that you hear, you know, people start blaming guns, they start blaming gangs, they start saying the drugs, and they start using words like thugs and monsters and, you know, these things. These are still our children.
Public enemy number one.
That's, right. That's the these one are still our babies out there. And understand this. And understand it. If Pastor, if these are monsters, if these are the worst people that you ever saw, and yeah, I'm upset with them too, then guess what? We created those monsters. We created a situation in which they're out here robbing and carrying on. When you got pools in Baltimore City, and listen, just hear this. When you got pools in Baltimore City, the children have to pay $2 or whatever they have to pay just to go to the pool.
Swimming pool.
And can only stay about an hour, hour and a half, and then they have to get out of the pool, leave out, pay $2 more or $5 more, and come back inside that pool. And this is the problems that we're having. We're not providing fair and equitable treatment to our citizens and to our community and to our children. They see this, and what they also see is the lack of courage and the lack of a backbone of all these so-called men out here who refuse to be men. If you don't like the way the police department is being run, then take your butt over to City Hall like they did in Minneapolis and got rid of the police commissioner. Okay? It's just that simple. The seat of power.
My problem
is
when you say get rid of the police commissioner, you tout the same thing that the Fraternal Order of Police. I'm not in no way defending Kevin Davis, but here are some stats that Kevin Davis has fired and prosecuted more than any other department.
No. Yeah. Because I listen, and I'll tell you why. I sit as a chair of the Vanguard Justice Society, which is the Black Police Officer Organization here. My whole career, I have kept stats on all the people.
How much money did you all contribute to the defense of the police officers that were involved in the fraud?
Sir, you're going to have to give me an opportunity to at least explain.
No,
you asked me a question.
How much did y'all contribute?
To what?
To his defense. To the defense of the officers involved in Freddie Gray?
None.
Okay, good to hear.
Now, but here's the bottom line also, and here's what you really need to understand, okay? You've never sat at a trial board or administrative hearing. When you say that this commission has fired more people, and then remember something, the people he has terminated are people who look like me, people of color. And if you go back and you look, I've already proven this in federal court, civil court, hearings in Annapolis, hearings at City Hall. There's all kind of reports out on it. And they do the same thing over and over again. They go after African-Americans, bump the charge up. And then they show those individuals as, look how many people I terminated for a minor violation. Oh, the officer was speeding off duty. You know what? And we're going to terminate him for that. But when you have these other officers out here, that are committing such egregious acts.
Yeah, I mean, it happened with the Freddie Gray case. I mean, the two officers riding bicycles, I mean, they were not African-American.
Right.
But the ones who got the most egregious charges were. Let's go to Clarence. Clarence, thanks for holding.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Brown, for taking the call. Good evening, gentlemen. I just wanted
good evening.
To say,
good evening.
Whether or not it's an actuality or not, all things policing in Baltimore City started in Annapolis. Come down through the Fraternal Order of Police, and I think City Hall is just like sitting on the sidelines. They're just there. They're just something that has an interaction with the police department, but it starts in Annapolis. Reverend, those what we were speaking of when the gentleman got shot 14 times, essentially, there was no gun found, no drugs or anything else. Essentially, he got just shot 14 times for running away. However,
he got murdered.
Right, murdered. No, 14 times.
He
14 times for running away.
Still.
Now, in contrast to the good police, bad police kind of a thing, I saw on Baltimore's the Sun Papers website a video of one police officer that walked into a robbery over on Harford Road and a couple of weeks ago. Two armed suspects, and both of them walked out of alive. He had one armed suspect on the floor with a weapon. He had another one in the back. He basically begged that kid in the back of that store not to make him shoot him. He begged homeboy, please don't move. I will shoot you if you move. Now, that police officer, as far as I'm concerned, in my mind, given what I've seen police brutality and where black people are getting shot, he deserves a medal. That's the contrast. Cowboy police, good police officer, cool in the fire. He let them live. Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Thank you, Clarence. And what about the gentleman on North Avenue who just we saw come out of the bar at North and Greenmount, I believe it was. And then the bad cops started wailing on this guy and just beating him unmercifully, and nobody said anything. Right. But the other cops stood by and watched.
These are learned behaviors. And one of the things I've always, and I've been the first one, I've always stood up and publicly acknowledged the fact that when we have police officers out here doing wrong, they should be punished. They should be put in jail. But we also have to understand something. Everybody has to do their part. And doing your part means that it's an ugly situation. We just can't sit back and throw stones and say it's going to get better. You have to make it better.
You know, David, when DOJ came here, I could go on and on. You'd have to have a special five-hour show. I gave DOJ a list of over 40 police brutality cases that just my office alone was handling. And so, you know, we have to go back and say, what did Freddie Gray teach us? Freddie Gray said that we had social problems that were at the core, education, jobs, economic disparities, and we were supposed to see those problems attacked and remedied while at the same time focusing on the immediacy. That never happened. You got a city where you got the state's attorney's office, the Baltimore City Police, the U.S. Marshal's office, the FBI, the Department, the Sheriff's Department, the Tobacco Firearm, DEA, if I didn't say it, Drug right. Enforcement. You're telling me that these people cannot come together
exactly.
and identify the guns coming in, how they're getting on the streets, and who the bad actors are in terms of repeat offenders? You're going back to what you said, Dave. We don't want to talk about conspiracies, but right. it makes you go,
Yeah, and I'm wondering if as much of black-on-black crime is happening as they say it is. Let's see. Tyrone, what do you think? You on the air.
Yes. How y'all doing?
Hey, Tyrone.
Yeah, hopefully I get the thought out. It's not taking long. First of all, as far as the politicians solving the problem of police brutality, politicians want to be seen as being tough on crime, all right? Not anti-police. So they're kind of in a conundrum. And all, at the same time, though, they don't mind being seen as being tough on the citizen. That's the biggest problem. Now, if somebody gets you through the lights, it's eventually they will first make you safe. And that's the danger of what's going on right now. Okay, now, if I convince you that what I'm going to do is going to make you safe, you're going to give up officers all your rights. It's been proven. Okay? But that's the only way I get you through the rights. So let's be careful. Give up both our rights and the rights of other citizens. Okay? Because not all police officers are bad, but at the same time, not all the citizens are bad either. Okay? So we got to be careful with innocent people. These unintended consequences of these laws, because when somebody makes a law, you got to be pretty naive, foolish, or maybe stupid. I don't know. Just believe that they're going to enforce those laws equally on the black community as they would in Roland Clark or Charles Wayne or King. Because history has shown that the laws are enforced the same way in the black community in Baltimore. And it's easy, you know, as far as I'm concerned. One of the remedies that I see, and I'm not even a Muslim. It's to put the NOI in a lot of these blocks. The police can't be seen as an occupying force anymore. Or the only thing they're going to see the police as being an occupying force with these planting drugs and all the other stuff that goes on. Maybe we need to look at putting an organization like the NOI, who actually care about the community, into those communities that are being oppressed by the police. And it's been shown that they're being oppressed with some of these videos and keep services of people getting their necks broke. And drugs being planted on them and shot 14, 15 times. Maybe that might be a thought that we need to look at. The police, the mayor of New Jersey actually fired the police force and replaced them.
I saw that day, mayor up in New Jersey.
Thank you, Tyrone.
And Tyrone brings some really, really good points. And let me just say this. The police department is not perfect. They got a lot of problems. They got problems in hiring personnel. They got power in terminations. They got power in problems in promotions. And they got the biggest one is with the community itself. many of these people that we're hiring and bringing in here, we need to look at the inner workings of the Baltimore City Police Department. You can't fix something unless you know what's wrong with it. And that's been the biggest problem. Everybody want to say, well, look, Commissioner, you go ahead and handle this problem. You know, we got the same deputy commissioner that we've had for several years in charge of operations. We don't have a person of color in that top branch up there. So how can you know what I like in the community or in policing, and you can't even relate to me? Many of these guys don't even live in the city. They don't care nothing about the city. And you know, I'll protect you and defend you when you're right. But also, when you're wrong, I'm going to be right there and say, hey, we had some shows this past week, and what I saw was everybody, and when I say everybody, Lottie Dottie and everybody, the attorneys, the mayor, the police commissioner. I've been on shows where all they do is point fingers at each other instead of coming together. We don't have a political godfather like Schaefer back in the day that can bring people together. We don't have anybody. Cummings, I thought, would at least step up to the plate. He can't, you know, these guys are not stepping up to the plate. Can't see hide nor hair of them. We got one of the greatest group of religious and pastors and spiritual people and mega churches, but you don't even see them getting together.
No, let me correct you again. Once again.
You ain't correct me the first time, Pastor. I'm not trying
well,
to
Well, let me say this.
You ain't correct me the first
things.
Time.
Let me add three things in here. One is from the Freddie Gray Baltimore Sun. Baltimore City Police charged with crime and death, Freddie Gray. It lists. Let me ask you a question. If the Vanguard didn't contribute money, it says members of the Fraternal Order, the Vanguard FOP, all surrounding the flanks entering the courtroom in support. So I guess that wasn't your organization. But what the police commissioner has done is the police commissioner has met with, on two occasions, given unprecedented access to ongoing investigations, strategies, and strategic plans to the nine biggest pastors in this city. That's not to disregard any of them, but they took the approach that this group of nine can deploy relevant information and ask confidential questions.
I'm a very, very quick, David. Yes. Until, as Kurt Smoke said, until they take the profit and the economic incentive out of drugs, we're going to continue to have the problem.
Exactly. Let me just say this.
Quickly.
Pastor, real quick, I understand your passions, but get your facts right first. You know, before you... Let me finish, okay?
Did you go, yes or no?
You don't yes or no me, sir. The bottom line is
okay,
this.
Okay, well, then I get the point. Did
no, you don't
go?
Get the point. You see, because...
Did you go? That's the point.
No, it is the point...
Pastor, let him make his point. I'll let you make your point.
...have corrupted our city and wreaked havoc on our citizens.
No, what's corrupted our city... What has corrupted our city is the lack of courage and the lack of backbone that even the pastors don't show to share in the city. That's what has corrupted this city. When you can get out there and march like I march, I didn't see you out there marching when I was marching. I didn't see you out there in Annapolis. I didn't see you out in the federal courts when I was trying to get fair and equitable treatment for the citizens of Baltimore. So, you know, it's easy for you to sit and call in.
I got to go, gentlemen. I wish I had more time. I can see I need more hours.
Hardwood, David.
Sergeant Hobson, Mr. Pettit, thank you all so
Thanks
much. Pastor Ron, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And all of you who couldn't get through, I know Officer Claude is still on the line, Kim Truhart, Corgan Vaughn. I mean, my goodness, my lines are lit up. I got people who want to get through. But we just simply don't have enough time. Special thanks to Ty, my producer, does a fantastic week in and week out. I'm David Brown. Remember, having timely access to reliable information is a key to our survival. Join us again next week for another exciting edition of Real Questions. Good night, everyone.